thank you so much for joining us. As I say every time that I'm here, I give many shiurim during the week in different places, and this really is the highlight of my month because it's so beautiful to be here together with everybody in the middle of a busy workday, taking out time to learn Torah and to enjoy each other's company in the middle of our busy schedule. So what we're going to talk about today is something that is extremely relevant to what we have done today, and that is the idea of reciting Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. So we have a lot to talk about, not enough time to talk, but we'll try our best to get in as much as we possibly can. When we talk about Hallel and Rosh Chodesh in general, it's not only something that's relevant to today being Rosh Chodesh, but it's also relevant to the fact that this week's Parsha is Parsha's Bo. And as we know, in Parsha's Bo, we learn HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, which means we were instructed to be in charge of the calendar, that we have to determine when it's supposed to be Rosh Chodesh, when the Yamim Tovim, when the Chagim are supposed to fall out. And this was really the first mitzvah that the Jewish people were commanded to keep upon their leaving of Mitzrayim. In fact, Rashi writes in the beginning of Chumash, why does the Torah begin with all the stories about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and the creation of the world? What relevance does it have to any of us? We should have really started the Chumash from our Parsha, where we learn about the very first mitzvah, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. So that is a very significant mitzvah that we learn in this week's Parsha. My father told me on many occasions that there are some who wonder, why is it that we say every Yom Tov, every one of the Chagim we mention, Zecher LiYitzias Mitzrayim. We say that this holiday is Zecher LiYitzias Mitzrayim. It's supposed to remind us of when we came out of Egypt. And the question is, Pesach, I understand. Obviously, the holiday was in commemoration of the fact that we came out of Egypt. And Shavuos, obviously, the whole objective of coming out of Mitzrayim was that we should be able to accept the Torah once we got to Har Sinai. So therefore, Shavuos also has some sort of connection to the leaving of Egypt as well. But when we come to Sukkot, the Torah says also that that's in commemoration of leaving Mitzrayim because we sit in a hut, and that is the hut that we sat in as we were sojourning through the desert after we left Mitzrayim. So all of those make sense. But take, for example, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. How could one explain that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are in commemoration of Yitzias Mitzrayim? What is the connection to Yitzias Mitzrayim? And yet, in Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we also recite the words, Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim. How is that to be understood? So my father explained to me on many occasions that perhaps the understanding of that is that when we say Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim, it means something different. It means, on that occasion, when we were set free from Mitzrayim, when we went out of Egypt, that was the time when God instructed us in this very important mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, that you are now the one who has the ability to determine when the holidays are going to be, when the Rosh Chodesh is going to be, when we declare a new month, when we have a leap year, when perhaps we don't. That was the mitzvah that was given to the Jews immediately upon their leaving of Mitzrayim, when they were freed. And therefore, when we say Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim, perhaps what it means is we remind ourselves of this ability that God gave us upon leaving Mitzrayim to actually determine when the holidays are going to fall out through the calendaric year and when the various days of Rosh Chodesh are going to fall out as well. So this was a very pivotal moment. It was a very important time. And the reason he suggested, Rav Soloveitchik writes, maybe the reason why this mitzvah in particular was given to the Jews upon leaving Mitzrayim was because we know that a eved, a slave, has no concept of time. He can be woken up at any time of day or night. He can be told to do a job, a chore, whether he wants to do it or not. He has no opportunity to decide what choices in his life are going to determine what he does. Everything is just thrown upon him. Everything is thrust upon him. And therefore, God wanted to teach us, upon leaving Mitzrayim, upon being a free people, that not only are you now responsible for yourself, and now you have the opportunity to choose how you are going to spend every action or every moment of your life, but also you have the opportunity to be mekadesh es hazmanim. You have the opportunity to infuse time with relevance as well, not just with the activities that you do, but also you can infuse the time by saying, today is a holiday, today is Shabbos, today is Rosh Chodesh, not today is Shabbos, Shabbos comes regardless, but this is something that we have the ability to do, and this is why in our tefillah we say, mekadesh Yisrael v'rashei chadashim, mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim. Why do we say, God who invested us with the sanctity, with the Kedusha, and because of the sanctity that is vested in each and every one of us, that is why we have the ability to be Mekadesh Es Hazmanim. That is what it means, Mekadesh Yisrael the Hazmanim. So, this is an important mitzvah to talk about, and let's just focus our attention on one aspect of Rosh Chodesh, which is a very important one, and that is the recitation of Hallel that we say every month, every Yom Tov, every holiday. Let's try to understand what it's all about. So there is a discussion. In the days of the Rishonim, there were a number of Rishonim who had an idea that they were going to write what in their opinion was the list of the 613 mitzvahs. Now what's fascinating is, the Ramban, one of the most important Rishonim that we know of, the Ramban questions the whole assumption. Who said that there are only 613 mitzvahs? Maybe there are many more, and maybe there are fewer. Who came up with this magical number? So the Ramban questions that assumption, but for some reason everybody assumed that the magic number that we have to work toward is 613. Now you have to figure out what belongs in the count and what perhaps does not, which bothered many of the medieval commentators to try to figure out what belongs in the count and what perhaps does not. So there were a number of Rishonim who said that one of the 613 mitzvahs that ought to be counted is the obligation to recite Hallel on Yom Tov. On all of the holidays, on all the festivals, we have an obligation to say Hallel, as well as to celebrate the Yom Tov in the particular way in which we do so. And there were many who said that that belongs in the count as one of the 613 mitzvahs. Now, the Ramban also had, in his opinion, what he thought were the 613 mitzvahs, and he makes many comments on the way others, other contemporaries of his, decided to count what they believe were the 613 and what were not. So if you look at the Ramban, we'll read it together in number Aleph. We won't read the whole paragraph, but I just put it on here for your own interest, where the Ramban writes, Hanira, Shehu min HaTorah. So the Ramban is troubled. Where do you get such an idea that Hallel is considered to be one of the 613 mitzvahs? How can that be? Where, if you challenge someone to look through all of the Psukim and Chumash, through all of the Torah, nowhere will you find that we have an obligation to recite Hallel on the Chagim, on the festivals, on the Yomim Tovim. So where does this idea come from? Asked the Ramban. And he answers, perhaps number one, maybe it is Halacha Lemoshe Misinai. He says maybe the origin of this idea is because it's a tradition that already originated from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, which means you won't find it in the text of the Chumash itself. And you won't be able to say, this is where we were commanded to recite Hallel on a given holiday. However, he says, this was a tradition that was given down already from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, and that is where it stems from, that is where this whole mitzvah originated from. That is idea number one that the Ramban suggests as to the origin of the mitzvah of Hallel on a regular festival, on a regular holiday. However, he suggests another idea, and he writes, maybe this is Bechlal HaSimcha Shenitztavinu Ba. He says, after all, we have an obligation every Yom Tov, every holiday, to be in a state of simcha, to be in a state of rejoicing, in a state of happiness. And therefore, writes the Ramban, perhaps one of the manifestations of being besimcha on Yom Tov means not only that we should eat delicious food, not only that we should sit around with our families, not only that we shouldn't work, which obviously makes all of us happy, but also, says the Ramban, part of the nature of the obligation of simcha is that a person should express their gratitude to Hashem on an occasion like this, which is a very good opportunity to do so. And therefore, writes the Ramban, these are the two reasons that he suggests are the origin for the mitzvah of Hallel on a regular Yom Tov. Now, this is all with regard to the discussion of Hallel on a regular Yom Tov. But Rosh Chodesh is not considered a regular holiday. Rosh Chodesh is not on the same level as all the other Yom Tovim. And that leads the Rishonim to ask, well, even if you assume, which is not clear in the first place, even if you assume that Hallel on a regular holiday would be a biblical obligation, what is the nature of the obligation of Hallel on Rosh Chodesh? And this is not clear at all. This is a major question where we have a discussion amongst the Gaonim. The Gaonim were living in the time before the Rishonim. The Gaonim were after the period of the Talmud Bavli, after the Gemara was completed. Before the Rishonim, there was the period of the Gaonim, and they are wondering, what exactly is the nature of Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, and where exactly does it come from? So there were some who suggested that we say every day in our Psukei Dezimra, Halleluka, Hallelu, Kel Bekutcho, and we have 12 or 13 stanzas that we go back and forth praising God. And they said, maybe that is where this idea comes from, that 12 or 13 times a year, we should make sure that we praise God by saying Hallel. Sounds like a little bit of a far-fetched, a little bit of a weak argument to make. What does that mean? Really, that is the origin of the nature of Hallel on Rosh Chodesh? How do you extrapolate from that chapter in Tehillim, Hallelu, Kel, B'Kodesho, just because it might have 12 or 13 stanzas, therefore it means that we're supposed to recite Hallel 12 or 13 times a year sounds like a weak argument. And in fact, if you look in the Gemara Meseches Erechin, the Gemara tells us that Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is not included in the regular list of days in which we are supposed to recite Hallel. So let's read, the Gemara has in Meseches Tainis Daf Chav Ches, but it's also the same Gemara in Meseches Erechin Daf Yud. So let's read it together. And we'll do the math and you'll see that Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, for some reason, is left out of the list. So let's see what the Gemara says. Amar Rab Yochanan Mishum Rab Shimon Ben Yehud Sadak. Shmona Asar Yom Bishana. There are 18 days in the year. He's referring to in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz Laaretz. So there are 18 days of the year in Israel that Yachid Gomer Behem is a Hallel, that an individual has an obligation to recite Hallel. What is the list of those 18 days? Ve'elu Hein. Shmona Simei Chanukah. Number one, the 8 days of Chanukah. We have an obligation to recite Hallel every day. Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Pesach. First day of Pesach. Obviously in Chutz Laaretz, outside of Israel, it means 2 days of Pesach. But why are you only listing the first 2 days of Pesach? Don't we say Hallel every day? The whole Hallel. So the Gemara says, what are the 18 days of the year that we recite the entire, complete Hallel as it is mentioned in the Siddur? So number one, we have the 8 days of Pesach. We have the first day of Pesach. I'm sorry, the 8 days of Chanukah. First day of Pesach. 1 day of Shavuos. Obviously in Eretz Yisrael, that will be one. In Chutz Laaretz, it will be two. Shmonas Yemei HaChag. All 8 days of Sukkos. Now, why is it that we recite the entire Hallel, all 8 days of Sukkos and not all 8 days of Pesach, is a good question, not for now. But that is what the Gemara says are the only 18 days in the calendaric year in which we have an obligation to recite the complete Hallel. Now, the Gemara left out the 12 days of Rosh Chodesh during the year. Why don't we say that should also be one in the list of the days in which we say Hallel? And the Gemara answers to that there are two basic criteria necessary in order to be obligated in reciting Hallel. What are the two criteria? Number one, says the Gemara, it has to be a day in which there is an Isser Malacha. Has to be a day in which you are not allowed to do any work, which obviously would exclude Rosh Chodesh. You're allowed to do work on Rosh Chodesh. We're all here. We're all in Citibank today. So obviously we're allowed to do work today. And that would also obviously knock out Chol HaMoed, because generally Chol HaMoed, not clear. Are you allowed to do work? You're not allowed to do work. Depends on the company. Depends how many Jews are with you. Right? It's not so clear. Do we have an obligation to abstain from Malacha on Chol HaMoed or not? So the Gemara tells us that in general we assume one of the basic criteria necessary in order to have an obligation to say Hallel is Isser Malacha. Now the obvious question should be, every Shabbos we're not allowed to work. So do we have an obligation to recite Hallel every Shabbos? No. Why not? There's an Isser Malacha.
What about Hanukkah?
What?
What about Hanukkah?
So that's a good question. What about Hanukkah? So these are all questions that the Gemara discusses. How do we come to the list that we have? But just dealing with the first criterion, if you say that ingredients that is necessary to obligate one in saying Hallel is that it's Asr Malacha, so Shabbos should be included also. So the answer to that, says the Gemara, is you need two factors. One is that it's Asr B'Malacha. Number two is the fact that it has to be Ikri Moed. It has to be referred to as a festival, as a holiday. Shabbos is not Ikri Moed. Shabbos is not referred to as a holiday. So you need, number one, Ikri Moed. You need, number two, that it should be Asr B'Asiyas Malacha. And that's where the Gemara comes up with this list. And obviously Rosh Chodesh does not fit into the category, does not fit into the list. And because of that, because we assume that Rosh Chodesh, the nature of the obligation on Rosh Chodesh is not the same as during the rest of the year, therefore we assume that on Rosh Chodesh you only recite half of Hallel. You only recite a partial Hallel. We refer to it as Chatzi Hallel. In order to clearly differentiate, to distinguish and show everyone, this is not the same as the regular Hallel that you're obligated to say on different occasions throughout the year. That is why we do it.
You still say half Hallel.
But you don't say the regular one. And that is just to draw a distinction, to show everybody and make it obvious that this is not the same as the Hallel that we're obligated to say on different occasions throughout the year. Now, there's a story that's told about, I don't know exactly who the story is told about, but they say a story of a Jew in Europe who wasn't so learned, and he walks into shul and, you know, there's a big sign up that says, because today is Rosh Chodesh, we're going to say half of Hallel. So he looks in the siddur and he says, which half are you supposed to say, the first half or the second half? Similar to the other story they say, you know, in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, it says that when you have the karpas, He's supposed to wash your hands, and you don't say Al Natila Sudaim. So there were those who just said Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kedeshanu Mitzvosav, and they stopped. So obviously, you have to know what the rules mean. It doesn't just mean you leave out the words Al Natila Sudaim. It doesn't mean you just arbitrarily pick half of Hallel. That's just the way we refer to it. I think they refer to it as a Yiddishism, right? We just refer to it as Chatzi Hallel, even though it's not even half. We just leave out two paragraphs. But the reason we leave out two paragraphs is just to clearly define and delineate what exactly is Hallel during the rest of the year, and that Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is not the same. We assume that Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is just a minhag. We assume Hallel on Rosh Chodesh was something that was developed later on. It was in order, the Rishonim explain, in order to let everybody know that today is not a regular day of the week. Today is a special day. Today is a day in which we are supposed to be offering special karbanos if we had a Beis HaMikdash. Today is a day in which we're supposed to be reciting Yalla V'Yavo in our davening. And therefore, in order to highlight that today is different, we need to do something to show that it is in a unique category of its own from the rest of the days of the week. So therefore, we recite Hallel, but we're not going to recite the regular Hallel. Now,
so for Yom HaTzmaut, the most people would do is half Hallel too.
That's a good question. That's a really important question. So Yom HaTzmaut, here you have a day which is not listed in the Gemara, and yet there are some who decided that we should say Hallel. So how does that work? Would you say that Yom HaTzmaut is more than Rosh Chodesh? So that's a very good question. That's a very important question. Maybe Yom HaTzmaut time, we'll have to talk about Yom HaTzmaut a little bit more detail, but it is actually an extreme halachic discussion about what is the rationale for those who believe that Hallel should be said. I'm one of those people, my father is one of those people, that say that there was a tremendous miracle that we cannot ignore, and Yom HaTzmaut is a very significant day in the calendar. Not everybody agrees to that. There are some who say Hallel, and there are some who say Tachanun. You know, there's all different kinds of practices. But some say Kinnus. You know, everybody has their own way of celebrating Yom HaTzmaut and commemorating the miracle of the day. But the truth is, that is a very important halachic question. What is the justification for Yom HaTzmaut for those who believe that it should be said? What is the justification to recite Hallel, and how do we fit it into the list, to the category of every other day in which Hallel is recited? Now, just because Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is only a minhag, it's only a practice, and it's not really an obligation, that should not make anyone mistakenly think that a minhag is any less important. Minhagim are something that we hold very dear. Minhagim are something that we believe are a very critical part of everything that we practice as Orthodox and halacha-abiding Jews. There's an amazing story in the 1800s about the great Rabbi Kiva Eger. He was one of the Gedolei Hador. He was one of the greats of the last few hundred years. And Rabbi Kiva Eger had such an amazing story. You know, every time I think about it, I'm just amazed. So what happened? There was a Sefer Torah that was found in a certain community. Nobody knew anything about where the Sefer Torah originated from. Nobody knew who wrote the Sefer Torah. Nobody knew who it belonged to. So somebody found the Sefer Torah, and they conveniently brought it to the closest shul, and they said, look, we found the Sefer Torah, you can make use of it, and maybe we'll donate it to the shul. Now the problem is, in Shulchan Aruch we assume that if you have a Sefer Torah that was written by a non-Jew or by an atheist, so we assume that Sefer Torah is not really considered to be a quality Sefer Torah. That is not a Sefer Torah that we can use for our purposes. So much so that the Shulchan Aruch says, if you have a Sefer Torah that you know was written by one of those personalities, it should be burnt. It is not considered to be a Sefer Torah at all. And we go so far as to burn such an item, which is a very extreme position, but that's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. So here you have a Sefer Torah. You find it on the side of the road. You know nothing about it. Maybe it was written by a non-Jew who's just trying to make some money, and he leaves it on the side of the road, or he's going to auction it off somewhere. Maybe it was written by an atheist, a person who's a non-believer in the authenticity of God's Torah. So how do we know whether or not we should use such a Sefer Torah? So how would you answer such a question? I'm not a prophet. How am I supposed to know who wrote this? I didn't have video cameras out in the road. I don't know who left it there. How am I supposed to know the origins of the Sefer Torah? So they sent the question to the great Gadol Rabbi Kiva Eger to ask him, how do we deal with this issue? What do we do with the Sefer Torah that showed up in the shul and we don't know who the owner was? Rabbi Kiva Eger answered the following. He said, look at the end of the Sefer Torah, and I want you to look whether the last few paragraphs in the Torah are written exactly perfectly aligned with everything else, or are they a little bit crooked? So they asked him, what is the difference? What does that prove to us? So he said, well, the practice in all Jewish communities all over the world is that when you have the opportunity to write a Sefer Torah, we leave over the last few paragraphs, and many members of the community come and fill it in. I'm sure many of us have had that experience. He said it's impossible when you have many members of a community who are coming and filling in. It's impossible that it's going to be straight like the rest of the Torah. You have everybody's pushing around. The sofer is sitting there for months writing the rest of the Torah and everything's perfectly written. When it comes to the last few sentences, the last few paragraphs, it's not going to be as aligned, as straight as everything else is. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva Eiger said, if this was in fact written by a halacha-abiding Jew, there is no way that the end of the Sefer Torah would be written straight. And he says, because it was written in a way where it seems that it was straight, that is a clear indication, said Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that this Sefer Torah is not an authentic one and it should be burnt. How amazing. How amazing. Now, what is Rabbi Akiva Eiger basing his ruling on? Where does it say anywhere that we have an obligation to go and write a Sefer Torah and we should all fill it in on our own in the end? Doesn't say it anywhere. This is a minhag. This is the practice that all Jewish communities have had. It's a very beautiful practice. It brings a lot of people into the experience of writing a Sefer Torah. But nowhere does it say that this is the obligation that we have. And based on just the minhag alone, based on just the understanding of communities that this is what we do when we write a Sefer Torah, Rabbi Akiva Eiger came to the conclusion that the Sefer Torah should be burnt, which is amazing. It's just an astounding psak that he made. And you see from that story and many others how important minhag is, how much of a staple of our religion it is meant to be, and it's not something that should just be brushed off. So here we have a practice that we say half of Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, but it's certainly something that we need to take into account, and it's something that we need to pay attention to. Now, not always do we have the opportunity to recite Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. I was asked a question a number of months ago by a medical student, and he has a very rigorous schedule, and I forgot exactly the details of his case, but something to the effect of he had a very long day, and he ended up davening at a minyan. I think he was finishing his shift, 7 o'clock in the morning. He went straight to shul to daven, and he didn't realize that it was Rosh Chodesh. So he was very exhausted, and he decided just to daven until Shemona Esrei. He finished Shemona Esrei, and he ran out. So he didn't realize that there was Kriyas HaTorah that day. He didn't realize there was Halal. He didn't realize there was Musaf. He forgot everything, because he just wasn't aware. He left shul, goes home to take a nap, and he's on his way out to his night shift, but he goes to daven mincha and shul, 10 minutes before the shkia. He goes to daven mincha and shul right before he goes out to work. And he texts me with the following issue. He said he just got to shul for mincha, and they made an announcement, Yala v'yavo. He says, oh my God, I can't believe it. Today is Rosh Chodesh. That means I have 10 minutes before the shkia to now catch up on mincha. Means I forgot to daven musaf this morning. It means I forgot to say halal this morning. It means I didn't say Yala v'yavo for shachris. I have a lot of things I need to catch up on, and I only have 10 minutes to do it. So how do I triage? So he asked me this question. I didn't know how to answer him. I wasn't sure what he should do. I just ignored him for the time being, and I figured whatever he does, he does. I don't know what to say. And I called him that night. I said, I just realized that you called me. You have something you want to discuss. It was too late then anyway, but I later discussed it with my father, and I asked him, so how would you triage? How would you prioritize? He says, well, the first thing that goes out the window is certainly halal. Because halal is not an obligation. We have an obligation to daven shachris and to daven musaf and to daven mincha. Those clearly are obligations that we have on a day like Rosh Chodesh. But we have no real primary obligation to say halal on Rosh Chodesh. So when you have to triage, which happens every so often, you have an emergency, you have a meeting, you have something, and you're not able to do everything. So the first thing out of all the list would be halal on Rosh Chodesh, as much as halal is such a beautiful tefillah. Unfortunately, on Rosh Chodesh, that is the bottom of the totem pole. So this is something to be aware of. And in fact, there was a major discussion amongst the Rishonim. It ends up being a machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, a machlokas between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Should we, in fact, even recite a bracha on the halal that we say on Rosh Chodesh? If, after all, it is only a minhag, it is not an absolute obligation, how can you say, Asher kedushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu? God actually commanded me to say halal on Rosh Chodesh? No, he didn't. This is just a practice that developed later on. God never told me to do this. So how can you say a bracha vitzivanu? God instructed me to do this mitzvah. Likra sahalo, God instructed me to say halal. God never instructed you to do so. And that's why the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, any Sfardim in the room? No? Terry's not here. But the Sfardim follow the practice of the Shulchan Aruch, and that is that we do not recite a bracha on halal on Rosh Chodesh, because after all, it is not really an obligation that we have. It is just a practice that developed over time. So why is it that us, the rest of us in the room, Ashkenazim, do recite a bracha, even when we recite halal on Rosh Chodesh? If it is not an obligation, how can a bracha be recited? And the answer to that is that we still assume that vitzivanu is appropriate. Why is it appropriate? Because one of the important principles that God instructed us to abide by is that we should listen to the chachamim of every generation as well. We have an obligation not only to follow the mitzvahs that are outlined in the Torah per se, but we have an obligation also to make sure that we keep to the word of the greats of every generation. And therefore, when we listen to the greats of our generation, and we say Hallel as they instituted us to say on Rosh Chodesh, it is appropriate to say Vitzivanu on that occasion as well, because after all, they instructed us, and that means vicariously God instructed us, because God asked us to listen to them, and by listening to them, it means we are fulfilling our obligation of listening to God Himself. Any questions so far? Yeah.
Since in the last 6 days of Pesach, we also do Chatzi Halal. Is that also Minhag? Is it all the same? Is everything the same?
Meaning, is it all one pattern?
Yeah, is Rosh Chodesh Minhag and last 6 days of Pesach?
No, last 6 days of Pesach are a real halacha, but there's a different reason why we only say half of Halal. And I don't want to confuse anybody.
Okay.
But we're almost at Pesach, right? Just another few weeks. Believe it or not, we're almost at Pesach. You know, someone just invited me today to come give a shiur on President's Day. And I said, you know, what do you want me to talk about? He said, Inyani Purim. I said, wow, we're almost at Inyani Purim. President's Day is in a month. So I guess if Purim is almost here, it means Pesach is almost here. So maybe we'll talk about it Pesach time. One of the important halachas regarding Halal on Rosh Chodesh is the following. And this is with regard not only to Halal on Rosh Chodesh, but also to Halal at all the times when we have to say it. If you look in number Vav, if you look at the sixth entry on the source sheet, you'll notice that we have a Mishnah, Meseches Megillah, and Daf Chaf Amud Beis, where the Mishnah tells us, Kol hayom kasher the kriyas hamegillah. On Purim, we all have to read the Megillah. What time of day do I have to read the Megillah? Let's say I have to be at work very early in the morning and I'm just able to daven shacharis and I don't have an extra half an hour to listen to the Megillah. So the Gemara says that we assume, kol hayom kasher the kriyas hamegillah. You are allowed to read the Megillah the entirety of the day. It can be read throughout the entirety of the day. Now, we have a concept that we refer to as rizim makdim and lemitzvos. You're supposed to try and perform a mitzvah as early in the day as possible, but it's not always possible. Not always do we have that opportunity. Not always do we have the occasion to do so. And therefore, you have the entire day to do that mitzvah. Number two, says the Mishnah, Kriyas HaHalel. There are days in which we have an obligation to read Halel. So what if I was busy the whole day and now Shkia is at 5:30, 6 o'clock, whatever, earlier, 5 o'clock? So let's say I say, you know what, I'll just say it tonight. It's 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, I'll say Halal tonight. No, the answer is you have to say Halal only during the daytime. Halal cannot be recited at night. Similarly, by the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar and shaking the lulav, all of these cases we assume are ones which have to be performed during the day and they cannot be done at night. How do we know that this is true? So the Gemara says we learn this because the Pasuk says, Zeh hayom asah Hashem nagila v'nismach avo. And it says, Zeh hayom means during the day. Or the Gemara says because the Pasuk tells us, Mimizrach Shemesh ad Mivao Mehulal Shem Hashem. We praise the name of Hashem from the time the sun goes up until the sun sets. And therefore we have sources that seem to indicate that Halal should only be recited during the daytime hours, Halal should not be recited at night. Which leads, that's what we're about to ask. What about the very strange case of Pesach night? Which is the question not of those in our generation, this is a question of the greats in the 1800s and the 1700s, they were all bothered by this. Why is it that on the night of Pesach we seem to defy the rule and we say Halal at night? That is the only time of year that we do so. And not only on the night of Pesach do we defy that rule of saying Halal at night, but we seem to defy another rule. And that is, we know that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Psachim that before we observe any mitzvah, we have an obligation to recite a bracha. And the Gemara tells us that the rule is you have to recite a bracha over La'asiyas, and you're supposed to recite the bracha before you go ahead and perform the mitzvah. So, before we say Halal, we recite a bracha. Before we shake the lulav, we recite a bracha. Before we blow the shofar, we say a bracha. Before we light the Hanukkah candles, we say a bracha. All of a sudden, the night of Pesach, we find that Halal is recited without a bracha being said. So that is a second way in which Halal on the night of the Seder seems to defy the regular rules that govern the recitation of Halal. Number three, we are told, the Gemara tells us, that when you recite Halal, one has to be in a standing position. The Gemara says that one has to try to stand when reciting Halal, and yet when it comes to the night of the Seder, we recite Halal sitting down. Number four, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Tainis that there was a time many years ago in Jewish history when there was a terrible drought in a community, and everybody was fasting, and everybody went out to the town square, and they were crying, and they were screaming, and they were saying Tehillim, whatever they were saying, And all of a sudden, God answered their prayers. God answered their prayers, and the skies opened up, and everything started to rain, and life was back to being wonderful again. So they said, we have an obligation to say hallel now, because we're so excited over the miracle that took place. But the Gemara says, they suggested, you know what, everybody go home, and first have a good meal. And everybody should first finish off the fast day, and then we'll come back to shul and we'll say hallel. Why? Because how can a person say hallel when they're hungry? It's better to recite hallel when you are al nefesh seveya v'al keres meleya. It is better to say hallel when a person is full, when they are not hungry, when they're not going to be worrying about the food. So that is what governs the regular law of hallel, that hallel should normally be said when a person is full. So early in the morning, we're not so hungry. It's not such a big deal. We ate dinner the night before. But over here, the night of the Seder, we haven't eaten all day. I don't know about you, but Erev Pesach, I don't find that many things that I'm able to eat. And I come to the night of the Seder and we're all very hungry, which we're supposed to be. The Gemara says you're supposed to be hungry the night of the Seder. So why is it that we recite Hallel before we eat the meal? Why don't we recite Hallel afterward? And the answer to all of these questions is based on a comment that the Ran makes. If you look at number Zion on the bottom, the Ran quotes one of the Gdolei HaRishonim writes in the back of Maseches Pesachim, She'ein anu korin osa b'toras korin. On the night of Pesach, we do not recite Hallel because we have an obligation to say Hallel. It's not because God told us that tonight is a special night and you have to say Hallel. Rather, he says, Ela b'toras omer shira. On the night of the Seder, we recite Hallel because it's more of a spontaneous, it's instinctive. We're experiencing our freedom from Egypt. We are recounting the story. And because of the incredible feeling of joy that we have, we just break out in song. Not because anyone instructed us to do this, but just because that is what we're supposed to do. So imagine, you know, on one's anniversary or your wife's birthday, right, you're supposed to do something special, or your husband's birthday. So, you know, would it be meaningful if your wife left a note on the bed that said, you know, tomorrow is my birthday, make sure you do something special for me? That would take away the meaning of what you did. This is not so spontaneous. This is not something that was instinctive. It's something I had to remind my spouse to do. So the same over here. Imagine if, you know, we plan it out in advance. The night of the Seder, everybody's supposed to be happy. So in order to show how happy you are, we're going to have spontaneous hallel, which is going to be started off by a bracha, and it has to be said in a standing up position, and we're going to lay out the rules of how you're supposed to do it. What do you mean? What kind of spontaneous shira is that? I was once at a convention, and the speaker made an announcement. We're so happy that everybody's here. We'd like everyone to join us for spontaneous dancing on the dance floor. And everybody's just looking around. Like, none of us were so excited to be there. And why is anyone dancing? This is not spontaneous at all. That would be the same on the night of the Seder. How can we tell you to recite a bracha to show how happy you are that you came out of Mitzrayim? We're going to tell you, and this is how you're supposed to do it. No, it should come from your heart. And if it comes from your heart, that means you just break out in song without a bracha being recited, and without standing up while you say it, and without eating a meal. You just do it on the whim because you're so excited for the experience that you're going through, that you're having on the night of the Seder. And that is the reason why the night of the Seder seems to be an unusual halacha, where we don't find by any other times that we recite hallel. Is it time for mincha already?
No.
What time? Another 3 minutes?
Right now, so, okay. So
we have to bench.
So
okay, there is a discussion. What if a person wasn't able to recite hallel in the context of davening? And I actually had this question this morning. I daven in the Young Israel of Woodmere. Most people in the Young Israel of Woodmere who are davening early in the morning have to go out to work, and that's why they daven quickly. And I am blessed that I work in the building, so I don't have to run out. I don't have to travel, and I work in the building. So for me, usually I'm able to daven a little bit slower than everybody else. Now the problem is, they daven quickly. By the time I was finished Shemona Esrei, they were already finished with not only Chazaras HaShatz, but also with Hallel. And we were up to
And Mincha,
almost. So by the time I was done with my Shemona Esrei, they were up to Kriyas HaTorah. So I didn't want to miss out on Kriyas HaTorah. I wanted to be able to listen to Kriyas HaTorah. So I missed Hallel, and I had to do a makeup Hallel after davening was over, which is not really proper. It's not really what's supposed to be done, but I had no choice. What was I supposed to do? So the question is, does it make sense to recite Hallel out of the context of davening? Does Hallel have any significance when it's outside of the context of the davening? Or does Hallel have to specifically be recited in the place where it's supposed to be said? And if you miss it, then there's no makeup. It's too bad. So we have a surprising comment in the Tosefta, where the Tosefta writes, Ha tfila veha Hallel ma'akvin ze es ze. That's the bottom line on the sheet, where the Tosefta teaches us, Ha tfila veha Hallel Me'akvin ze'ezeh, which seems to indicate that if you don't have the opportunity to say Hallel in the context of davening where it's supposed to be said, then you cannot have any makeup later on. That's the way some understood this Tosefta. And therefore, in my case, like this morning, where I wasn't able to say Hallel with the rest of the minyan, I wasn't able to say Hallel right after Shemona Esrei, maybe one would perhaps argue that I didn't have the opportunity to have a makeup Hallel either later on. But this is really a mistake. There are Sameach, Rameir Simcha Midvinsk, who lived in the 1900s, pointed out that that is not the proper interpretation of what the Tosefta means. The Tosefta really means Hatfila v'ahalo ma'akunzeh. It's not referring at all to the Hallel that we generally refer to as Hallel. It's talking about a regular Shemona Esrei. In Shemona Esrei, we have many different components to what comprise the Shemona Esrei as we know it. We have parts of Shemona Esrei that are bakashos, that we ask for something, parts of Shemona Esrei that are praises, that are Hallel, and parts of Shemona Esrei that are, you know, that are just different components make up the Shemona Esrei. And therefore, what the Tosefta teaches us is, with regard to Shemona Esrei, if a person doesn't have time to daven the whole Shemona Esrei, so would you tell them, just ask for what you need for today and then leave? Leave everything else out? No, that doesn't make sense. If I don't have enough time to daven Shemona Esrei, would you tell me, just thank God and leave out all the bakashas? No, that doesn't make sense either. Shemona Esrei is very important in the way it's designed, and that's what we're taught here in the Tosefta. A person has to make sure that when reciting Shemona Esrei, you have both of these components. Number one, that you have hatfila, that you ask for whatever it is that you need. And number two, one has to make sure that they also insert the hallel, that you say modim, and that you thank God for everything He has provided you in your life. And that is a very important component to what the Shemona Esrei is all about, and that is something that we need to think about whenever we daven, that both of those components are a very important part of the tefillah that we offer every day to the Ribono Shel Olam. Let's just close with one final thought, and that is the following. The Gemara tells us that we have a discussion whether or not we should say that God is Hamuhulal Birov HaTishbachos. Do we assume that God is the one who deserves most of our praise? Or is He the Kel HaHodos? Is He the one that deserves all of our praise? He's the God of praise. So the Gemara says we have a discussion whether or not we should refer to Him as the Rov HaHodos or the Kel HaHodos. And you look in davening in Nishmas on Shabbos morning, we refer to God Hamuhulal Birov HaTishbachos. Anyone ever think that's strange? Really? You only owe the Ribono Shel Olam a debt of gratitude for most of the things in your life? Really? What about everything else? Why do we leave out the 25%? Why do we say God is only worthy of our praise for 75% of my life? Everything else, nah, I did it on my own. I don't owe it to Him. What do we mean? So Rav Soloveitchik made a comment, my father writes it very beautifully in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, where he suggested the following. If a person is going to live life and just say, you know, everything that happens in my life is just because of God, and everything that I'm provided with is all Him. So although we know that that's true, God has put us into a world in which we're a part of society, we're a part of civilization, and we have neighbors, and we have friends, and we have spouses, and we have families, and we have children, and there are many other people along the way who facilitate God's will. It's not all just God Himself. Obviously, it's all in His divine plan that we have whatever we have, or we don't have, or whatever we don't have. But in the end of the day, we have to be grateful to the people around us. Imagine you have a person who just lives life saying, it's all God, it's all God, and they never bother to say thank you to their husband, to their wife, never say thank you to their children, they never say thank you to their employer. Why should I thank the employer? I'm the one who's doing the work for him, so he's paying me, but I'm doing it. But we all say thank you anyway. Imagine you go to a restaurant and you say to yourself, why should I thank the waiter? He's paid to do this job, so why should I ever say thank you? And imagine you go to the gas station and you ignore the person who's helping you there, because after all, this is what his job is, this is what he's supposed to do. That's not the way we live life. We live life saying, yes, we recognize that almost everything in life is really because of God Himself. Yes, Hamuhulal Birov HaTishbachos, but we make sure that we leave over a small percentage of the thanksgiving that we owe, not to be only to the Ribono Shel Olam, but to the people around us as well. And that is such an important part of being a grateful person. Because if you don't know how to thank others, you will ultimately come to deny thanking God Himself as well. How do we know that that is true? Because the Pasuk tells us, Yosef ends up in Mitzrayim. Vayakam melech chadash. After all that Yosef did, after everything that Yosef accomplished in Mitzrayim, what are we told? Vayakam melech chadash al Mitzrayim, asher lo yadayas Yosef. All of a sudden, a new king comes into power. Never heard of Yosef. Either it means he just blocked him out of his mind. He was not a grateful person. He did not find it important for him to be thankful to Yosef for everything that he did. And the Medrash says there, Kalakofer b'tavaso shel chaveiro. If you fail to recognize the kindnesses of those around you, libasov, says the Medrash, kofer b'tavaso shel makom. In the end, you will come to deny the existence of God Himself. How do we know that that is true, says the Medrash? Because by Paro Melech Mitzrayim, it all began. He blocks Yosef out of his mind. I don't know him anything. He did nothing for this country. It would have happened with or without him. And ultimately, in our parshios, Paro is the same person who says, Lo Yadati Es Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu comes along and he says, you know, God says you should let the Jews out of Egypt. And he says, who's God? Who's that? So the Medrash says, it all starts with his lack of recognition of individuals, of people around. And it leads to something that is far more consequential, to something that is far more important, and has a far more negative connotation, that you end up denying the existence of God Himself. This is also what we find by Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon originally denies the thanks that he owes to God, right? What does Adam HaRishon say? Ha'isha shenasati, what is this horrible woman you gave me? Look what you did. You set me up for such a disaster, you do something so horrible. Later on in Chumash, we learn that there was a generation that we refer to as the Dar HaHaflaga. Who were the Dar HaHaflaga? They decided to rebel against God Himself, right? They decided to rebel against God Himself. And they are referred to in Chumash as B'nai HaAdam. Why do they have the distinction of being called B'nai HaAdam? Everybody is the child of a human being. We don't believe in immaculate conception. So what does it mean, B'nai HaAdam? Why do we refer to the Dar HaHaflaga as B'nai HaAdam? The answer is, says Rashi, because these are the children of Adam HaRishon. That same person who was not able to be grateful to the people who were around him in his own life ended up being referred to as B'nai HaAdam. They came to deny the existence of God Himself and to rebel against Him. That's what happens. And Seder of Soloveitchik, that's what it means. We refer to God, yes, obviously you are the Kel HaHodos. We understand you are the one that we owe all of our thanksgiving to in life. That's true. But we cannot live life that way. We cannot say everything in life is only God and no one else has any part in anything we do, in any of our accomplishments. That is a false way to live life, because if we do that and we fail to recognize that, yes, we only give God Rov HaHodaos because we owe it 25% or 50% to other people who are around us, who are part of our lives, who are part of our family structure, if we fail to be able to do that, then ultimately we would fail to recognize God's presence Himself in every moment of our lives, and every blessing, and every aspect of the lives that we live as well. So we spoke a little bit about Halal on Rosh Chodesh, Halal throughout the year, and our perspective on gratitude and thanksgiving in general, how important it is for us to be grateful people and to recognize not only the presence of God and the blessings that He gives us in life, but also the presence of all the great human beings around us who make sure to provide us with all the great things that we are able to have in our own life. Wish everyone a Chodesh Tov once again, and we're going to bend.